I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Yeah, it sure is. We're kicking it old school today.
Yeah, look at that.
Let's see, I got to turn this down. I got to remember how to do this program. I've already realized something I forgot.
Uh-oh.
It's fine. We're working through it. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. The Friday vibes are high because we are hella shorthanded today.
Yeah.
No Jesse, which salute. He's going to somebody's wedding. His sister-in-law's
nice.
Wedding.
Okay.
I think. Maybe. Joe is on promotions duty. So it's just us. It's just you and me. So we're kicking it old school. I'm in Studio One today. And so if there's any hiccups with the program, we're just going to blame that. Had to take that. There's that. All right. And all right. Now we're set. Now we can do a program. James, Kyle, ESPN 1320. We're on the radio, of course. 98.5 FM HD2 as well as 1320 AM on your radio dials. We're on YouTube and Twitch. YouTube.com/ESPN1320. Twitch.tv/ESPN1320. You can find us on the Odyssey app. We're on the iHeart app. We're on the TuneIn app.
We're everywhere, Kyle.
We're everywhere. We're on your favorite podcast platform, the James Hamm and Kyle Madsen Show.
That's right.
We're all over the place. So if for some reason you didn't listen to a portion of the program, there's no excuse. You can go find it in so many different places. You can listen in so many different places. And we do that just for you. All right. I said that there was no more news to come out about Jonathan Kuminga. Somebody just had to do a thing, and turns out there was more news to come out about Jonathan Kuminga. It dropped this morning in The Athletic, New York Times, from our buddy Sam Amick. Here's the details. Here's kind of what you need to know. The Kings and Jonathan Kuminga, or the Kings have offered Jonathan Kuminga a 3-year, $63 million contract, mm-hmm. So $21 million a year. The Kings, in exchange for Kuminga, offered Malik Monk and a lottery-protected 2030 first-round pick. If that pick did not convey, it would become the 2031 pick, which the Kings currently have a swap with the Spurs. So the Warriors would get the worst of those two picks. It would be unprotected.
Yep.
So if the Kings had the first pick and the Spurs had the second pick, the Warriors would get the second pick, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I had that right. So that's currently the Kings offer that we know about.
Mm-hmm.
There are some complications that we'll get to. The other interesting note I thought in Sam's piece is that Phoenix is not a serious player, it sounds like. They don't have anything that Golden State wants.
Yeah, this very much feels like European soccer, where a team goes out and literally negotiates a salary with a player.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they got the salary with the player, then they go to the team and figure out a transfer fee.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the transfer fee is just way too much. So you spend all this time working out daily wages with a player, and then you go and they're like, yeah, we want, you know, $105 million. They're like, well, we're going to offer $47 million. It's like, well, that's not going to happen. We're not going to sell you that player.
$58 million.
Well, but, I mean, that's, you know, they're offering 4 second-round picks when they only have 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're, you know, all of these things that we're hearing, this, right, like, weird Suns offer. And it's just really difficult to figure out a way forward for these teams.
Does it sound to you like the Warriors called up the Suns and were like, hey, do you want Kuminga? And the Suns were like, not really, but I mean, maybe. What do you want for him? And the Warriors went, all right, well, we'll start with Ryan Dunn.
Yeah.
And the Suns kind of went, well, no, that's not on the table. And that's kind of the extent of it, because Sam Amick says that there were never serious talks between Golden State and Phoenix. So maybe Phoenix called the Warriors. The Warriors said, hey, we want to start here. And the Suns went, nah, never mind.
Yeah.
And now they're just lingering. Like, they want to go home. But Golden State can't let them leave the conversation because that's their like, that whatever minute measurement you want to use of leverage against the Kings. So you can go, well, you have to offer more than Devin Carter, Dario Saric in a couple of seconds because we got this other team over here. And meanwhile, the Suns are trying to walk out of the room and the Warriors are grabbing them by the collar and pulling them back. They're like, see, they want to be here. And the Suns are like, we don't. We don't have anything. We don't want him.
You know, it might be that. It could also be this, Kyle. Like, I remember there's a story that I've heard that years ago when Kevin Durant became available, when he left OKC, Vivek had just taken over the Kings not that long before in 2013. And what year did Durant sign with the Warriors?
17. July of 2016.
Okay. The word was that when he became available via free agency, Vivek told the people in charge at that point, hey, go get us Kevin Durant.
Right.
And it's like, well, what do you mean go get Kevin Durant? Like, well, go sign him. Like, he's available now. Just bring him in. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, like, first of all, we don't have the cap space. Secondly, like, he might not want to come here.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably looking for a
key
championship
factor.
Option.
Sure.
When he just went to what game 7 against the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals the season before.
Right.
And so that's what this kind of feels like with the Suns situation, where a new owner's like, hey, just go get him.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we just sold Bradley Beal because we ain't got no money. We've got no monies. Like, what are we supposed to do? Like, go, I don't care, go sign him.
We have no money and no players we want to give up, and also no picks.
Yeah, it's really like the guy on Saturday Night Live. Just do it. Just do it. Just figure it out. Just do it. You're like, oh, okay. Well, we can't. We can't figure out how to do that.
Like, there's rules in place.
There are rules in place. Yeah, this is like...
This is bowling. There are rules.
I feel like every day we talk about the complexities of this deal,
yeah.
Right? And I think realistically the offer that the Kings have put out, and I want to like kind of pull back a little bit. Like, when you offer, they're offering, according to Amick, a 2030 protected pick, so lottery protected.
Mm-hmm.
And then if not that year, you would get the next year, which is... You know, it's the pick swap
right?
So you're going to get the worst possible of the Kings and Spurs.
So we were talking about earlier. If the Kings have the first pick and the Spurs have the second pick, the Warriors are getting the second pick.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. And it can be that. It doesn't have to be just like the difference between like the 8th pick and the 29th pick.
Yeah.
It very well could be, because Victor Wembanyama could be in his prime, but also by 2031, Victor Wembanyama could play for the Knicks or something. So we have no idea. Like, he could, you know, Nico could have gone to the Spurs and then traded him to the Lakers. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen. But to be honest, that's not a bad offer for a guy, especially if you look at, you know, sort of the balance here of talent. Mm-hmm. Like, Malik Monk is a very good NBA basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make the argument that he's actually a better basketball player than Jonathan Kuminga. Now, Kuminga might have a much higher ceiling,
sure,
but just straight up as a basketball player, who's going to impact winning more on day one? You could make the argument that would be Malik Monk. But if you're able to pull this off, you are giving something away way off in the distance. The Warriors get their $20 million-ish contract that they can try to trade later if they have some option to go add another star-level player.
Right.
And then on top of that, this draft pick situation, that has a ton of value to a team like the Warriors, because they don't have a bunch of players that they can trade.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have other young players that people are just salivating to get their hands on.
Right.
You know, like, would you take Moses Moody? Yeah, you take him.
Sure.
But you're not like, hey, I'm going to give you two first-round picks for Moses Moody. That's not happening.
Right.
You're not even getting a first-round pick for Moses, most likely.
Right.
So either way, like, this would provide the Warriors with at least something, as opposed to losing Kuminga for nothing.
So yes, for sure. But there's a separate piece of this that, from Golden State's perspective, because I think just on the surface, when you go Monk in a first for Kuminga, like, why is Golden State not doing that? Monk is by far the best player they're going to get in this process. Like, by by a wide margin. But as Amick notes, as Amick, not Brett Siegel, as Amick noted in his piece and Brett Siegel aggregated, the Warriors, to make that work, would have to move off of additional money because of the base year compensation thing. They can only take back X amount of money in that deal based on how much is Kuminga's deal would only count for 50-ish percent going out.
Yeah, it counts for 50% going out, and but there's also the like $7.5 million rule. So as long as half of his salary plus $7.5 million works out, I think you can make the move. So I don't think that's not the problem. It's that if they're able to pull this deal off, it would push them into the second apron. Or at least past the first apron.
Okay.
And so it's going to come down to like a matter of them figuring out ways to dump salary to get back below either the luxury tax or the apron.
Right.
In order to, you know, to not pay a huge luxury bill.
Right.
But like, look, I told you earlier, like, if you take Malik Monk and you put him on the Warriors, I have a hard time believing the Warriors aren't a better team than they are today. And probably a better team than they are with Jonathan Kuminga on it.
So I think I don't necessarily disagree, especially since if you took when Steph Curry got hurt against Minnesota in the playoffs this year, if you had Malik Monk on the floor, it would have made a really significant difference, I think, in that series for Golden State. But on the other hand, this comes back to something we were talking about with the Kings the other day. Okay, so you trade for Jonathan Kuminga, but if you're now having to trade Malik Monk, and this is before we knew that Monk was on the table in the trade, if it's Devin Carter, Dario Saric, and a first, but then you also have to trade Malik Monk, and oh, hey, you know what? You've got to attach a pick to do that. And now all of a sudden, it's like, all right, you ended up giving up all this stuff to get Jonathan Kuminga. I think that's kind of, from the Warriors' perspective, something that they have to take into account. Okay, we're trying to get off of Jonathan Kuminga. We're cool doing that. We're cool taking a lottery protected first that conveys to a Spurs, a pick swap with the Spurs the next year. We're cool bringing in Malik Monk. Oh, but now we got to get rid of one of our only two floor spacers in the process. Like, dang. Okay. And we might, if you're trying to offload Buddy Hield, you might have to attach a pick to do that. So now are you attaching picks to it? It becomes this huge, just like from the Kings side, it could get convoluted. Now it becomes convoluted from Golden State side, where it's not as easy as, and this may still be the best deal they get. This may be the deal they wind up pulling the trigger on.
Yeah.
But, and like we said, very, very clearly, it's the best deal that they've gotten so far. But if it turns into that convoluted, all right, well, now you got to find a taker for Buddy Hield or Moses Moody, probably prefer it be Buddy Hield, but Moses Moody doesn't really play and can it just, so that's from Golden State side why it's not just as easy as Monk. Yeah, we can figure out a way to use that player. Bet. Cool. Let's do it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like you're basically shifting all of that salary issue to the other team.
Right.
And that's why the Saric Devin Carter offer always looked better for the Kings. And for the Warriors, for that matter, except for the Warriors are searching for like this $20 million, like get out of jail free card. There are other trades here, which these two teams can pull off where you can kind of balance it better, where it might work for both teams. But again, it would probably be Kuminga at like $19 million and start his starting salary. And then like, let's say Moody, right? So put him in, that's $32 million. Now you take DeMar DeRozan at 24 and Devin Carter at 6. Mm-hmm. Now you're up to 30, and the trade might work a little easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't create as much of an issue for both sides. Like there would be some people that like the Warriors would be taking on less salary, the Kings would be taking on more salary. They would have to figure out how to get under the luxury tax after that trade, but they would need to get out under the luxury tax by a couple of million bucks, not by 10 million. And it's why I've brought up like, hey, if you were to pull off this deal where it's Devin Carter and Dario Saric for Kuminga, that's going to push the Kings like 10 million. You're going to be right up against the first apron where you're hard capped.
Right.
The Kings are already right at the luxury tax,
which like, they are not willing to pay.
Yeah, they are literally right there.
I have additional questions about that we can get to later.
Okay.
But go on.
Yeah, but that's why I keep bringing up this other like idea of taking a player like DeMar after this trade and moving him for a guy like Terrence Mann. So, of course, the Nets are getting, you know, they're taking on more upfront salary when they have tons of salary to take on.
Right.
But they're losing, you know, two additional years of contract for Terrence Mann. The Kings would be extending Terrence Mann basically into that 2027 window, which they have been reluctant to do. They probably don't want to do, but it's also like a $15, $16 million contract that you might be able to move. So, so I think that in a trade like that would clear up like this $10 million gap that the Kings are currently going to be faced with if they do find a way to get Kuminga. This is like advanced, like this is three-dimensional chess that these teams are trying to play. And, you know, like there's so many angles that you have to look at when you're talking about this trade, because there are ripple effects. There are instantaneous things where it's like, okay, well, that trade's not going to work financially. And you've got to somehow tightrope walk all of it. I think the one good thing for the Kings, and probably even for the Warriors at this point, is that if they're going to make a trade, it's probably with the Kings. And if they're not going to make a trade, then they're probably going to lose Kuminga at the end of the year as an unrestricted free agent.
We have plenty more of this coming up.
Yeah,
the NFL preseason began last night. Did the 49ers make a mistake with Trey Lance? We'll talk about it. We'll get to that. We'll keep talking Jonathan Kuminga, because I want to get a little bit further into the salary side of this, because that may be a bigger holdup than the compensation of the deal. And I have a few questions for you on that. So we'll dig into that. Like I said, we got some NFL. Pete Carroll said an insane thing about the Raiders running back room that we'll get to. We've got trade requests in the NFL. Tons to get to in the next couple hours. It's a Friday. The vibes are up. We're the insiders. That's James. I'm Kyle. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Joe Brazil on assignment. I'm going to hit the commercial.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Be home. Huh. All right, no voice guy today, I guess. James Hamm there, Kyle Madsen here. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, rocking with you until noon on ESPN 1320. That is Sacramento's sports leader.
The voice guy got the day off too?
Yeah, voice guy's out too.
Dang.
Man.
Everyone gets a day off.
I have no idea why. That's the real bummer about this, is this isn't one of those things that I'm like, oh, I need to hit a button. I have genuinely no idea what I got to do here to fix this.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's fun.
All right.
I'll ask Seth later, or Jonathan. Those are our engineers. Anyways, a couple things from the chatty house. Ant-Man's says, hey, James and Kyle, apparently the Warriors rejected that offer too, talking about a lottery protected 2030 first round pick and Malik Monk for Jonathan Kuminga. My assumption is that they turned that offer down in the sense like we'll see. Because, A, we've talked about that requires the Warriors to now make additional financial moves to shed some salary. So I think that's probably one hurdle. And two, they might like that offer, and they might be exploring these other trade avenues to see if there's a way they can make it work that it's actually going to be beneficial for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the first time I've felt that, where I look at this and I go, okay, this is something that they might be able to talk themselves into, where Malik Monk is a player who can, I've seen it described this way, and I think it's a perfect description of some of the players on the Warriors bench. He can actually dribble three times without turning it over.
Oh,
that's big time. They don't have a ton of guys who can do that. I wouldn't, even if the Kings called today and went, fine, we'll make it an unprotected 2030 first, I think Golden State is still like, well, hang on. We gotta, before we do that, we have to make sure that we can get off this other salary.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes everything complicated. And I think the one thing that we should always remember is that the luxury tax doesn't get, like, counted until the end of the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can go over luxury tax today and then find a way to go back under the luxury tax. Like, we've talked about this in the past. So let's say that the Kings were able to do this deal, right? Just straight up Monk mm-hmm. for Monk and a first for Kuminga, right? Mm-hmm. That would increase their salary by a couple hundred thousand. Not that much. Maybe $1 million, but probably not even that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more like 700,000. I'm gonna guess that the starting salary for Kuminga is like 19.5 or 19.7 million. Because that's how you get a 3-year $63 million rate like contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we think of it that way, that the Kings have to just like find a way to get down a couple of $1 million. That's pretty simple. Like, you just don't you waive the team option on Terrence Davis and you drop back down, and now you have one less player. You drop to 14 players, but again, you get under the luxury tax. Or you go out and you buy Dario Saric out of his contract at 5.5 million, but that deal is like, again, it breaks down to like 1.8 million this year, and then you save like 3.6 mm-hmm. million or whatever, 3.8 million. So there are ways in which they can clear space, but none of that gets calculated until the very end of the year. So you can get to the deadline and try to make a move. And if you can't make a move then you can waive a guy. But of course the salary up to that point, basically, you've got to pay out the salary. Mm-hmm. The window to stretch provision a guy is like right now. I think it's between now and like October 1st, something like that. So if you're going to waive a guy, you've got to do it like relatively quick.
Sure.
And then use a stretch provision.
Okay. From the King's perspective,
mm-hmm.
I want to talk about the salary of this all.
Okay.
Because I think we can talk about compensation. Is this worth? Ultimately, Jonathan Kuminga is going to be worth whatever Golden State wants to get for him.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what it's going to come down to, and the Kings are either going to match that or they're not. Where do we want to start with this? Okay, let's start here. The Kings are not going into the luxury tax. You've said that for a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
Amick noted it in his piece today. The Kings aren't going into the luxury tax.
No, from my conversations with people within the walls of the team, they yes. are not going into luxury tax for a team that they don't know how good they can be.
Right.
Right? So, like, there are ways in which they would go into the luxury tax.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have to be like an, oh my gosh, I can't believe that just happened deal. Where sure. they landed a player that took them from, like, a solid team that, you know, mm-hmm. could win anywhere between, let's just use the Vegas number, 35.5 to 45.5, right? Mm-hmm. They go from that team to like a bona fide contender, like, oh my gosh, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's two deals, right? Mm-hmm. It's two trades that like you pull off somehow.
Mm-hmm.
They would go into the luxury tax if they were like, oh, look, we got a shot to contend.
Sure.
But they're not going into the luxury tax just to go into the luxury tax.
Right.
And especially you have to remember that these... that the penalties for going in the luxury tax and going above the first apron and going above mm-hmm. the second apron, they compound.
Right.
So,
right.
like, if you're a repeat offender, you pay a certain dollar. Right. If you're a two-time repeat offender,
it's the repeater tax, yeah.
It is the repeater tax, right? Mm-hmm. So, that's where, if you're the Kings, there is a time where you should be a team looking to go into the luxury tax.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because you have a team that you absolutely know is going to be great.
Right.
And you're walking into the trade deadline and like, okay, we can swing this deal where we've got $18 million worth of player and we're going to take on a $26 million player. Mm-hmm. But that $26 million player could put us over the hump and we could be like a full-fledged contender
sure.
for the ring.
Sure.
You know, but... And to take on that extra $8 million in salary will mm-hmm. push you into the second apron
sure.
or something.
Sure.
We're just not there.
Right.
And I'm with them. I agree. This team right now, you look at this team on paper, you're like, okay, like, sure, a broken clock is mm-hmm. right twice a day. Mm-hmm. There is a way in which this team could be good and be like
sure.
There's a way in which it could happen.
Sure.
But like we're talking about like this very narrow path.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not asked, like as somebody who studies the salary cap, I wouldn't ask a team to go into the luxury tax. Just go into the luxury tax.
And just to be totally clear here, because I think there's an immediate kind of reaction that, oh, it's the owner being cheap, it's Vivek being cheap. No, this is it's an NBA wide thing.
Yes.
There's no teams that are like, we're a 40-ish win team. Even if you want to be optimistic and say, yeah, but on the high end, like 45 wins.
Yeah.
They're not, and they can avoid going into the luxury tax. Now, I think there's some, there are some teams last year that were tax teams that were not contenders.
Oh, the Suns.
Right, but that's more a product of, A, they thought they were going to be better, and then B, you just weren't going to unload those contracts and become not a tax team by the time the season ended. Like, it happens sometimes, but not on purpose. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I'm with you completely.
So let me ask you this, though, on the Jonathan Kuminga front, because part of the complication here is if the Kings are going to acquire Jonathan Kuminga, they're, what did you say this morning? They're $80,000 under the tax-ish?
Something like that.
They're less than 100 grand. They are five figures under the tax line.
Yeah, and even, I'll keep adding this in,
mm-hmm.
they're under the tax line, but according to NBA rules, they're actually over the tax because they have these mystical, like, potential bonus money mm-hmm. that count towards your luxury tax dollar.
And at the number they're at under the tax, if one of those bonuses hit, they're over. They're a tax team.
Yeah.
So I acquiring Jonathan Kuminga, even if they move Malik Monk in that trade, they're still taking on money and will go over the tax, correct?
Yeah.
Which is part of the complication here.
Yep.
Because they have to figure out now, okay, how do you bring him in and then also get under the tax? But what if I told you,
uh-oh,
hey, I'm from the future. Jonathan Kuminga is a perennial All-NBA guy. Not going to tell you first, second, or third team. He's just a perennial All-NBA guy.
Yeah.
But to get him, the Kings have to be in the tax this year. Do you think the Kings would do it? Like, they'll go into the tax this year and be whatever they are with Jonathan Kuminga on their team. Maybe they win 35, maybe they win 40, maybe they win 45. I don't know. But you got to be in the tax. But you know that Jonathan Kuminga is going to be an All-NBA guy in 2 or 3 years.
Of course. If he knew he was going to be an All-NBA guy, and let's say, okay, so he's 22 years old. He's going into his fifth season. Like, if he's going to be that, it would be this year, or this would be the year that he sets up that he's going to be an All-NBA guy, and then next year would be the year that he would be the All-NBA guy. You know what I mean? Like, the league works in very specific orders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're a player on a team like the Kings, and you go from averaging 15.2 or 16 mm-hmm. points, whatever he did the last 2 years, to 25 points per game and 7 rebounds, and you're this exciting prospect that's all of a sudden turned into an all-star level player, you got to show me you can do it twice. Because that's typically what happens. Like, mm-hmm. I can just, DeMarcus Cousins didn't make the All-Star team the first time that he should have made the All-Star team. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but then a player got hurt. I think Chris Paul got hurt. And instead of having DeMarcus go into the All-Star game again, they gave it, like, Goran Dragic averaging 16 points a game, got an All-Star nod. But then the next year, he made it. You can go back to the same thing with De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox averaged like 25 points per game, did not mm-hmm. make the All-Star team. The next year, he didn't make it either, but then he was the injury replacement. And then if the Kings would have continued to ascend, he probably would have continued to make not only All-Star teams, but he was also third team All-NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are these ways in which, you know, you build up a player. So if I'm the Kings and you think that Kuminga could be an All-NBA player, you would be absolutely crazy, because not only are you getting him like for like a future first round pick and what amounts to you moving on from a player that you clearly have been trying to move on from all summer,
mm-hmm.
but you're also only paying $20 million a year for him for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if all of a sudden he becomes, let's just say, Mikal Bridges with the with the Nets when he got traded to the Nets and averaged 25.9 points per game or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're like, holy cow, we've got something, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now his value is so incredibly high, not just as a player, but as a potential trade chip or as a franchise altering like all NBA guy. Like that changes everything. And so that's why you get into this mess. It's the only reason the Kings are getting into this mess. Yes. It's the what if. Mm-hmm. And if the what if hits, then you literally just cashed in a lottery ticket.
Yes.
If the what if doesn't hit, what's worst case scenario? You've got Kyle Kuzma. I think that's the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. You've got a Kyle Kuzma-esque player. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it countless times. Kyle Kuzma can get traded.
And a $20 million trade chip.
Yeah, and there's a reason why Kyle Kuzma gets traded from one team to the next, because he has a $20 million trade chip, but he also plays up to the standard of close to a $20 million player most of the time.
Yes.
And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's why the Kings have been attached to him forever, because he's actually not a bad NBA player. Mm-hmm. He just might not be a perfect fit. So that's kind of the risk and reward for the Kings. If I'm them, like, the floor is pretty high.
Yeah.
Like, I've brought up J.J. Hickson. I don't think he's going to go out and do what J.J. Hickson did.
Sure.
You know, J.J. Hickson literally walked in the door and was like, oh, I can't believe this place. This is horrible. I can't believe I'm here. Like, how come there's not a chef cooking me food right here at the end of the game? Like, he was coming from a Cavs team that had made title runs, although he was just a bit player in the title run with LeBron. But then it was like this, like, he just couldn't get over all of these nuances to the game.
Sure.
And, I mean, the Kings waived him before the end of that first season. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're talking about. But the talent level might be similar. Like, J.J. Hickson was an extremely talented player.
Totally.
He just couldn't figure it out. Mm-hmm. So.
We were trying to come up with a player comp for Jonathan Kuminga earlier, and I don't know if we ever landed on one.
Yeah.
It's like you got to find a 6'8", super athlete, draws a lot of fouls.
Yeah.
Gets to the rim at will, is efficient around the basket, not a great three-point shooter, not a great rebounder, not an awesome passer. Just kind of it's kind of this weird, like, maybe it is J.J. Hickson. I admittedly don't remember peak J.J. Hickson.
Yeah.
From a statistical standpoint.
Well, Bobby Hill in the chat brings up Gerald Wallace. I don't hate that, except for Gerald Wallace played like his hair was on fire.
Yeah.
Like, I loved watching Gerald Wallace play. Mm-hmm. But that's not Kuminga's style. Like, I don't know, a really scaled down Paolo? Because he does have a bunch of, like, old school post moves and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he gets to the rim, and he's, you know, again, he can score in a variety of ways. I'm not going to call him a three-level scorer at all.
No, he's not a consistent enough shooter.
Yeah.
At least from beyond the arc. It's weird, man. It's really, really tough to find a specific comp. I think that's part of the reason why it's so tough to be like, yeah, I would give up this for this guy.
Yeah.
Because am I getting Paolo Banchero? If you're telling me I'm getting Paolo Banchero, unprotect that 2030 first and figure out what else Golden State wants.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I'm getting J.J. Hickson, I'm taking Malik Monk off the table. I'm taking a first off the table, right? Like, that's and I think that's where so much of the push-pull comes from. I think the only wrong thing is that you know for sure what you're going to get out of Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah, well, that, and I'm also going to add this, like, I feel like the Warriors are trying to play from a position of, well, I mean, look what he could be.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like,
yeah, but you've been here, you are the team who has limited who he could be the whole time. Mm-hmm. So you can't tell us who he might be able to be, because you're the one who have, like, refused to take the training wheels off.
Right.
So
you have made it really clear. And again, I'm not trying to bash Golden State. They are doing what any team would do in this spot, and they're trying to gain leverage. Mm-hmm. They're trying to build some form of power position.
Yes.
In this negotiation. And okay, cool. You can try it. I don't think anyone's really buying it, especially since all the offers we've heard from other teams, there's immediate reporting that's like, nah, well, not really.
Yeah.
Like, they're actually not. The Heat actually aren't involved. The Suns, actually, those talks really didn't progress very far. So I don't blame them from that standpoint, but they've spent 4 years. We've talked about this ad nauseum. They've spent 4 years letting everybody know that they don't think Jonathan Kuminga is a winning player. And now they're trying to go like, hey, look at this winning player we have. He's going to turn your franchise around. Yeah. We just don't think he fits now. And we don't want him here, but you will definitely want. Like, that's not going to work.
No, but there's so much potential here that you're like, okay, I see the potential, and I see why Scott Perry's in this.
I'm gonna bring up my buddy Mark Grandy again, who I brought up yesterday. He does Warriors pre and post over at 95.7 The Game, and he does some fill-in hosting and producing. Love Mark Grandy. But he said on Twitter, I'm not doing the Malik Monk and a 2030 lottery-protected first deal if I'm the Warriors. And my question would be, okay, then what deal are you doing? That's kind of where, if they want it top 10 protected, all right, then cool, quibble. And if you're the Kings, you can hold out and see if they'll come. But okay, fine, we'll go to top 10. Top 5 protected, oh, okay, don't love it. But okay, we believe that much in Jonathan Kuminga. I think outside of that, I don't know what else you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Now, the Hield and Moody thing does come into play. And what can you move those guys for, one of those guys for, you attaching picks to it? I get all that, but I think just on the surface, I don't know what better deal you're going to get.
No.
Especially because I don't know that the Kings are super interested in continuing to bid against themselves.
Well, especially since it's August 1st and you've had a month and mm-hmm. nobody else has come to you with a better deal.
A Malik Monk. Malik Monk.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no? It's been a full month. I mean, you've had time here.
Yeah. So. All right, the Hall of Fame game was last night. The NFL preseason is officially underway. We're going to put a pin in the Hall of Fame game, though, because I have a 49ers thing I think I'm taking crazy pills on, and I can't believe Pete Carroll said this about the Raiders running back room. We'll get to all that next. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. And this is ESPN 1320, and that is Sacramento Sports Leader.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Voice guy gets the day off. I'm Kyle Madsen. That's James Hamm. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. That feels weird to me.
Yeah?
Not having voice guy intro the segment.
Yeah, that's totally bizarre.
It feels like I'm batting left-handed.
Oh. Did you ever do that? Have you ever batted left-handed?
Not like in a game situation. Okay. Messing around playing wiffle ball, yeah.
Yeah, so wiffle, me and my brother would we would play and we would switch back and forth. So you'd have to, like, I would take the A's lineup in
nice.
Like 1988 and my brother would take the Yankees lineup. And
hell
so
yeah.
Anytime, you know, that's where you luck out with the switch hitters and stuff.
Totally.
But if you got a bat left-handed, you know, you got a bat left-handed.
You actually had to bat left-handed. That was great.
Yeah.
Did you do that with pitchers too?
No.
Or just the batting lineup?
Neither one of us could pitch left-handed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I had a teammate in high school who I could probably just name him because nobody listening, but I'm not going to. He would mess around batting left-handed a lot. He was right-handed.
Yeah.
And at practice, he would, with coaches around, he would just switch over to the left side and hit from the left side. And it was like, it wasn't bad. Like when I swing left-handed, it is, like,
yep.
Have you ever picked up a bat? Like it just, my body can do the swing mechanics on the right side. I cannot figure it out from the left. It just doesn't, my doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
But he would sit there and he'd roll a couple of ground balls to the right side and it would like look okay, but he's not hitting the ball hard or whatever, but he sucked.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like he was a good player batting right-handed. It's like, why are you batting left-handed? Why are you doing this? I don't understand. How is a coach not like, hey, person, do you practice that shot? You know, Patrick Ewing thing? Like, go bat right-handed and get good at that. And then you can worry about trying to switch hit, you weirdo.
That's funny.
He would wear, he was so self-conscious about his calves that he would wear two pairs of socks to make his calves look bigger.
Oh, okay. Yeah, one of those guys.
Yeah, and just like charging a ground ball, would pick it up, and then you could set your feet and throw it.
Yeah.
Like, he's a two-hopper. And he would do the thing where he'd like catch it on the run and like fall down as he was throwing. It's like, what are you doing, guy?
Yeah.
Oh, just the worst. Yeah. Just the worst. Ugh.
Every once in a while, batting left-handed, I would get a hold of one. Just like
nice.
Rip it through.
Yeah.
And just crush a ball. But outside of that.
And that's found money.
It was usually an out. Yeah. Outside of that, it was usually just a straight up out. Me and my brother both would take outs batting left-handed as long as you could hit the plate.
Sure.
So a lot of walks.
Nice.
A lot of ghost runners. Yeah.
We had this setup at my parents' house growing up. We'll talk about football in a second. But we had this setup where if we would pitch to the garage. So batter is standing there, garage is the backstop. Because my neighbor's fence, who we would play wiffle ball, the way his fence runs is directly across the street from my parents' house. So it was a perfect like home run marker.
Yeah.
And then there was like some dirt. It's like, okay, that's a triple. If you hit the sidewalk, it's a double. We had this whole, it was incredible. It was such a good setup. It's now that I realize that we probably destroyed so many plants, my parents' garage door, like just probably my arm. I have an elbow problem. It's probably from hucking wiffle balls as hard as I could.
Oh yeah. We had we would set up a lawn chair, and if you hit either the back or the seat or the sidearms, that would be a strike.
Smart.
So with a wiffle, you can throw a curve that's at somebody's head and drops and catches an arm or the piece of the back. And nice. Then we had, our house was, it was two stories, but the garage, we'd always play with the garage open. And then it had a huge slope. So if you hit the slope, it's an out. If you hit it over the house, it's a home run. If you hit it below the gutter and above the garage door, that little window there that you see, that was a double. Yeah, we had it all lined up.
Love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I miss wiffle ball so much.
Yeah, I love wiffle.
Maybe we should just start doing that.
Yeah. I think Justin Case would play with us.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Justin probably plays in a league.
I would love to play in a wiffle league.
That'd be the best. That'd be so fun. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you till noon. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills on the Juwan Jennings injury situation. So he left practice on Sunday with a calf injury.
Yep.
Okay. We find out that, he also had a calf injury in OTAs that kept him out of OTAs. So I immediately had a red flag go up.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, okay. Christian McCaffrey, Kevin Durant,
Tyrese Halliburton. Yep.
How many calf injuries have we seen over the years turn into a much more significant injury than a calf strain? It feels like a lot, to the point that I see calf injury now, and it's like top of the list of things you don't want to see when a player is injured. So that already had my red flags up. And then Kyle Shanahan, who spoke for the first time since Sunday's practice yesterday. Yeah, because he didn't speak Sunday, didn't speak Monday. They were off. Didn't speak Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. They were off Wednesday. That's right. So he spoke yesterday for the first time since Jennings got hurt. Question for Kyle Shanahan was, do you have a timetable for Juwan Jennings? His full answer, I don't have one.
Mm.
No elaboration. No, yeah, he's doing well. We're not going to put a timeline on it because we don't want to. Just, I don't have one.
Yeah.
Later, a follow-up question. Is Juwan's calf the same that he had in the spring? Yes. He got asked two questions about Juwan Jennings' calf and said five words.
Ooh.
And that, to me, again, my red flag is already up because it's a calf injury. And then when you don't even get the cursory, do you have a timetable for Juwan Jennings? Like I said, he didn't get the, he's working through a calf right now. He's going to miss this block of three practices. That's what he said about D'Amador Lenore. He's got some hip irritation. He'll miss this block of three practices. We hope to get him back soon. Jacob Cowing, Renardo Green, they're working through some hamstring stuff. Hope to get them back for the second week of the preseason. Cool. Easy. You got a timetable for Juwan Jennings? Nope. Don't have one.
I'm wondering.
I'm sorry. What?
Why the follow up two wasn't? Is it like a grade one calf strain? Grade two? Like what type of calf strain is this?
I would assume that he won't approach that because you don't necessarily have to. In training camp.
Okay.
But yeah, it's worth like okay. What is it? Because he's called it a strain. Is it a minor strain? Is it completely torn? It just, but they're not required to go into that level of detail, and that's fine. But you don't have a timetable at all.
Okay, so I guess Kyle, the question is: do you think they don't have a timetable, or do you think that's it? That he's holding out, he's holding in.
I think they don't have a timetable.
Okay. Yeah. Because this feels like because of the way he answered and the abruptness of it. That he just doesn't want to talk to Juwan Jennings at all, which means that they might be in the middle of a contract thing.
Huh.
Which they are in the middle of a contract thing.
They are. They definitely are.
But
and like, maybe that's what this is a soft holding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what it kind of feels like it might be.
Well, and this NFL Players Association story that we've been following, thanks to Pablo Torre Finds Out, the podcast, which he's done a great job reporting on that, him and Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. But one of the things one of the reasons that J.C. Tretter was under fire, the former chief strategy officer of the NFLPA, is because he went on Russ Tucker's podcast and basically said, I would never advocate for a player to fake an injury. But if you're unhappy with your contract situation, I wouldn't advocate for it. So maybe that's what this is.
Yeah.
And if it's that, then okay. If it's not, I'm going to take it at face value here and say that it's a severe enough strain or they called Christian McCaffrey's injury last year a calf injury early. And then it turned out to be Achilles tendonitis.
Yeah, it was Achilles tendonitis, which is, yeah.
And this, if you're taking this at face value, because maybe you are right, maybe this is contract related and Juwan's like, yeah, no, it hurts. You know what would make it feel better? $15 million a year. Like maybe that's what this is. But if it is at face value, if he is actually hurt and the coach is saying, I don't have a timetable. That to me feels like, oh, this is going to be one of those things where he doesn't participate in practice. And we're sitting here the first week of the regular season and he's absent the first 2 days and limited on Friday. And we're like, wait, what? Where's Juwan Jennings?
Yeah.
I can't. And maybe I'm taking crazy pills. Maybe the doctors just said, yeah, you know what? We got to see how this heals up. We don't want to put a timetable on it because we don't want to pressure him with a calf. We think it's maybe a week or two, but we got to see. With a calf, with no timetable, with a terse answer, it super sends a red flag.
Yeah, it leaves.
You're hoping it's a contract thing.
Yeah, it leaves a door open for interpretation.
Yeah, like you're hoping at this point he went, nah, okay, I've done my job at practice. You guys aren't negotiating in good faith, so I'm gonna be injured. I'm gonna have this calf. This calf is flared up on me.
Well, shout out to Kyle Shanahan for giving us an answer that created an entire segment of the show.
Yeah.
Because it leaves the door open for interpretation, you know?
Do you have a timetable? I don't have one.
Oh.
Oh, my.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
I am hoping that Juwan Jennings is just upset because of how contract negotiations are going. That would be the best outcome here.
That would be ideal. Yeah. You give him a contract and he magically feels better.
Yeah. Oh. Shannon's like, I got a timetable.
It's
like
the magic spray in soccer. Oh, look, they sprayed him. He's better.
That's so silly.
Yeah.
It's the silliest sports thing that everybody just accepts. Actually, no. Do you know what the silliest sports thing is that everybody just accepts?
Uh-oh.
That refs properly spot the football?
Yeah.
How do we decide that? That just... I talk about this all the time. When the NFL was founded... they spotted the ball the exact same way they spot it now.
It's crazy. It's crazy what they do.
Like some side judge who's 10 yards behind the play sees a pile of bodies and is like, eh, right about here.
Well, a football field is 80 yards wide. I mean, it literally can be anywhere on there.
That's not 80 yards wide.
Are you sure?
Yes. I guess 56 yards. We have the technology.
Maybe a soccer field. Yeah, a soccer
football field
80.
Is 53 and a third yards wide.
Okay.
Soccer field definitely wider.
Yeah. But 53 yards is a lot. So it's possible that someone is, 80 feet away from you, and you're supposed to know exactly where the ball went down.
All right, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's the sports thing that gets accepted. Although, shout out to the Hall of Fame game. Gave us our first real measurement where they don't bring the sticks out and they do the technology that they use in tennis to mark the ball.
Yep.
They did a measurement like that last night. I thought it went great. It was awesome. Huh. We just get the little graphic. Yep. First down. Cool. Moving on. You don't got to watch the chains. And like, how do you know that that man is running straight? How do you know that he is on the right spot? You were guessing. And we're not talking about by yards. When you have Gene Steratore pulling out a index card to see if there's space between the ball and the stick, like, that could be messed up by one false little step.
And I have yet to see a side judge that's like 27 years old with like hawk vision. Like, most of them are like in their 50s plus.
In great shape, though. You're running up and down.
Great shape. But that doesn't mean like you hit 50 in your vision, you start losing like parts of your vision. Like, man, is this really the best way we can do this?
Yeah.
I don't think this is the best way we can do this.
I will say this. They do a very good job for the most part, because there's times where I'll be like, man, what? How did they get that spot? And then they'll show the replay and you're like, wow. All right, they kind of nailed it.
Yeah,
but I bet there are so many plays that happen in a year where a team gets an extra half yard, just because, hey, you know what? There was a pile, they blew the play dead, but then the running back kind of maneuvered himself forward a little bit. So when he came out of the pile, he was here, and the rush is going like, yeah, he's here.
What am I
sure, man? And we just accept it. Like, ah, good spot.
I'm excited to see if they like microchip the ball so we know exactly where.
No, I hope so. I'm all for technology in sports. Give me all the technology in sports.
Yep.
That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Lots more Jonathan Kuminga stuff coming up. Pete Carroll said the most insane thing that he could have said about the Raiders running back room. And we got to talk about that next. The NFL season right around the corner. We'll have plenty of football coming up in the second hour. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. And this is ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.